जननीं शारदां देवीं रामकृष्णं जगद्गुरुं पादपद्मितयो श्रित्वा प्रणमामि मुहुर्मुहुः. We are continuing the spiritual teachings of Swami Brahmanandaji. One of the questions which is very important is our non-acceptance of different gods and goddesses. Maharaj, what is the significance of all these gods and goddesses? Do they really exist? And what is the meaning and purpose of ritualistic worship? Maharaj, the many gods and goddesses represent but so many different aspects of the one Godhead. Men differ in their temperaments and so are inclined to different ways of worship. To meet the needs of all, the scriptures prescribe four distinct methods of worship. One method is the ritualistic worship of God embodied in an image or a symbol. Higher than this, the worship of God with prayer and japa. By this means, the aspirant prays and chants and meditates upon the shining form of his chosen ideal within his own heart. Higher still is meditation. When a man practices this form of worship, he keeps up a constant flow of thought toward God and becomes absorbed in the living presence of his chosen ideal. He goes beyond prayer and japa, but the sense of duality remains. The highest method of worship is meditation on the unity of the Atman and Brahman. This leads directly and immediately to God. The aspirant experiences Brahman. He knows that God is. It is an actual realization of the omnipresent reality. These are the different stages through which the aspirant progresses. It is of vital importance that a man begin his spiritual journey from where he is. If an average man is instructed to meditate on his union with the Absolute Brahman, he will not understand. He will neither grasp the truth of it nor be able to follow the instructions. For a while he may try, but sooner or later he will tire of the struggle and give up. However, if that same man is asked to worship God with flowers, incense and other accessories of the ritualistic worship, his mind will gradually become concentrated on God and he will find joy in his worship. Through such worship, devotion to the performance of japam grows. The finer the mind becomes, the greater is its capacity for the higher forms of worship. Through japam, the mind inclines toward meditation. Thus, the aspirant gradually and naturally moves toward his ideal. Take the illustration of a man standing in the courtyard of a house. He wants to reach the roof, but instead of climbing the staircase step by step, he permits himself to be thrown up bodily. What happens? He is seriously hurt. So it is with the spiritual life. One should follow the gradual path, for just as there are laws governing the physical world, and so are there laws governing the spiritual world also. So two important ideas about gods and goddesses. In Hindu mythology, there is a mention of gods as well as gods. Gods like Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, goddesses Devi, Saraswati, Lakshmi, Parvati, and gods like Indra, Varuna, etc. So these are called lower gods, and these gods, it is a position actually, like Prime Minister or President, it goes on changing, depends upon the number of votes he can muster. So they have some powers. So both are true. You cannot simply say it is imagination. God is only one, but His manifestation comes through these two different aspects. First of all, first point we have to know, all this is true. The higher gods and goddesses, as well as the lower gods and goddesses, they are all there. And they can do good or they can also do harm. So, different people get different powers. Like, you know, president has greater powers and the senators have lower powers and there are local people, I don't know what you call, MPs or whatever you call them, they have still lower powers. Like that, these are all true. Why is it necessary for us to believe that these are true? Can we not do without that? Rarely. If we study the lives of great saints, I can refer to Indian saints like Ramana Maharshi. He was a pure Advaiti. And yet, he believed not only in different gods and goddesses, he also had extraordinary things to say. I will mention one or two. See, he used to say, firstly, that there are a special category of human beings called Siddhas. And they will be there underground, in underground cities. And a man who attained to the highest pinnacle of spiritual realization, for him to say these things, he would not simply say unless they are true. So there are people who are very highly evolved. They look like human beings, but they have higher realizations. And they live invisibly. One instance is there. Ramana Maharshi was living in what is called the basement of the temple. Arna Chaleshwara. It is called Patala Griha. And he was also an extraordinarily good student. He had extraordinarily good memory. What he reads once, he never forgets. And there are certain books. They are called Sthala Puranas. And it is the greatness, glory of some area, local place, that is called Sthala Purana, especially holy places. So in that Sthala Purana, it is written that there is a city of Siddhas beneath the present Thiruvannamalai, and only rarely persons behold that. Now if you come back to Sri Ramakrishna's life, when Sri Ramakrishna first came to Varanasi, he saw two Varanasis, if you remember. What was the first Varanasi? A golden city filled with golden light, and he could never answer calls of nature there. He had to cross the river and go some other place. And then later on, when his mind came down a little, he saw the ordinary city that we see, and yet extraordinary. So there are things beyond our ken, and it would be extremely foolish to say such things do not exist. So Ramana Maharshi, one day, he said, I was sitting there, and a ray of light was coming from a corner of that, what is called basement. And he said, I became curious. I went there and there were some blue stones. I removed them. I went inside and slowly the path was widening. And I went a little inside. I saw that there was a huge city there. But I wanted to go a little bit inside, and huge wasps came and stung him and drove him out of that place. He understood it is not the intention of the Siddhas that he should enter into that. Like this, so many incidents are there. So if you tell this to a modern man, so come on, find out, let us see. We don't know what we are going to discover, but certainly they do not want us. They want to be in peace. In this respect, Ramana Maharshi also told something very interesting. How do they live? They don't come out. So there are some plants. So you know, there are some plants in Amazon, if you break the branches, pure water will be coming. They can drink that water. Huge amount of water, bucketfuls of water. So the local people know, and then all that they notice is with a machete, they will cut one of the branches and pure water, they know what they are doing. So Ramana Maharshi said, this small plant exudes a kind of milk. And if the Siddhas, once they drink a little bit, for about 15 days or 20 days, there is no thirst, there is no hunger. Would you believe it? This is a matter of belief. So there are other stories. One day he found a huge banyan leaf, and it is written in the Sthala Purana that Lord Shiva sits under a huge banyan tree, and that banyan tree has this kind of leaf. It is usually banyan leaf is a very small affair like that, but this a person can eat food, huge leaf. So when he was sitting there, he was a great trekker. He explored the whole thing. He was a naturalist. He knew many plants with aushadhis and other things. Aushadhi means medicinal effects. So he was very familiar with all those. Now you don't see anything. Totally it has been denuded by people.
Even that tree with the huge leaf, banyan leaf, that is also
gone. Nothing is there. Or it had died before people could discover it, whatever it is. So he wanted to investigate, and then again bees stung him so badly, he gave it up. What is the point? There are gods and goddesses who hold different types of powers. For some reason, if we displease them, then we can be harmed. And if we can please them, they can also help. So I will tell you one or two such stories in connection. One story, when Chandramani Devi was carrying Sri Ramakrishna, then she could see so many gods and goddesses. How dare you say that I believe in Sri Ramakrishna, but I don't, these are all cock and bull stories. There are so many things which we do not know. So one day, one god came, a small god, riding a
swan.
And he looked tired. So naturally, in Bengal is a place where you get tired even by entering that place. Yeah. That's why Sri Ramakrishna decided, Swami Vivekananda decided, no more coming to West Bengal. We had enough of.
No, Thakur said
he is
going to come again in Bengal.
Yes, he said, but he said somewhere far away, northwest. He did not say West Bengal. Anyway, we don't know where he wants to come. And he said, this time I will come like a bowl.
So bowl is in Bengal only.
There are bowls outside.
South India also.
In every area, what is called folk songs, etc. Anyway, whatever it is, if he comes again, he will suffer again. So,
He says he came farthest from South India. I like that.
Yeah, that is true. Where does he come? Where dharma is at its lowest. So we don't know where he is going to come. So another story, we get, you know, the very birth of Sri Ramakrishna. Shudiram went to Gaya Vishnu temple. And what was the description? He saw his ancestors in a dream, vision-like. And then he saw the whole temple was filled with light. And then there he saw Gaya Vishnu. Now you see, what is the point? We read about ancestors, Pitruloka. He did Tarpana. And all the Pitrus appeared to him. Was it his dream, imagination, or was it a fact?
It's a fact.
It's a fact of life. But we do not have that. Okay. Why did Kshudiram go there? Why did Kshudiram go to Gaya?
For that Brahma Rakshasa, to liberate that guy.
You know, the story goes, a demon, or day, what is called, what do you call it?
Demon,
kind of Brahma Rakshasa. A Brahmin committing lot of sins, after death he will become a Rakshasa, demon, Brahma Rakshasa. So he possessed Kshudiram's daughter. And Kshudiram recognized, and then why are you troubling my daughter? Then the reply was, I want your prayers to release me. And so how many people believe in Brahma Rakshasas? Let alone Brahma Rakshasa, even an ordinary Rakshasa. Yeah. They are there. Sri Ramakrishna's life is full of these stories. Kamarhati, in Gopala's mother's house, he had seen two skeletons. Swami Brahmananda, it is, so many stories are there. Holy Mother said. Okay. Another story was Swami Yogananda was traveling in a train, going, I think, to Jaipur. And the one night he dreamt, before reaching Jaipur, that night he dreamt, a goddess came in his dreams and said, but for Paramahamsa, I would have finished you today. You go and offer puja in Jaipur. And he narrated this story to Holy Mother. And next time, when they were moving in the Jaipur streets, and suddenly Yoganandji saw one small place, this goddess. He said, Mother, this is the goddess whom I saw. Immediately Holy Mother bought some sweets and then offered worship for her. Do you think that these are superstitions or they're all there? Yeah. So there are different gods and goddesses. What are their roles? Some type of gods and gods like Indra, Chandra, etc. It is there. They can also grant some things. Now, Chandi, how many varieties of goddesses? Kali, Chamunda, etc. It goes on mentioning. And Bhagavad Gita also. There are those who worship Yakshas, Bhutas. They will attain them. And those who worship Devatas, they will attain Devatas. And those who worship me, they will attain me. It is all there. We also believe, we means the Hindu scriptures also believe that if somebody is offering worship, etc. to these gods and goddesses, then they can protect them, they can grant. I remember a story. There was a great soul called Vidyaranya. And Vidyaranya was later on, he became the head of Sringeri Matha. And he wrote many beautiful books. When he was not yet a sannyasi like that. He was an extraordinarily learned person. He worshipped Mother Saraswati. And Mother Saraswati came and told him, I am going to give you a boon. I can give you a lot of money. He said, he did not refuse it, but he said, I will ask you when I need it. So then the Krishna Devaraya, he wanted to be established as the emperor, you know, Vijayanagara Samrajya. At that time, money was needed. There were two, Harihara and Bukkaraya were there. And at that time, this money had come handy, and then he could establish it. So many stories like that we hear. And Swami Brahmananda used to advise many people, you read the Chandi. Reading of the Chandi is a lot of spiritual strength and protection for people. In South India, most ladies, they do this Lalita Sahasranam. It is on every Friday. In South India, it is the Friday which is the Mother's Day. Saturday is Rama's Day. Yeah. Thursday. Hanuman is on Thursday. Guru and Hanuman on Thursday. Monday is for Shiva. Tuesday is for Krishna. In our order, Wednesday is for Ramakrishna. Thursday is for Raghavendra Swami, Hanuman and Guru. Friday is for the Divine Mother. So one day, very wonderful, you know.
Yes,
you have varieties.
Yeah.
So there are many gods and goddesses. So many saints have this. By their grace, many people also have attained powers. There are also what we call Kshudra Devatas, smaller powers. And so many of these Kapalikas and others worship them, and they will get some powers also. These kind of stories are there. So I am not going to go into these things. What is important is faith, that these gods and goddesses do exist. After all, there is so much variation in our world. Some are rich, very rich, some are not so rich, etc. So why not there is variation in gods and goddesses also? That is the point. So what does it, how does it help? That is the point. How does it help? Because there are so many people who have faith in a particular aspect of the god or goddess. So if they worship, they will attain to them. So what we need to do, you don't need to worship if you don't have the faith, but you have no right, first of all, to say they do not exist. Secondly, we have no right to look down upon those people and say they are superstitious people and they are ignorant people. We are very enlightened people.
Yeah.
Maharaj, one thing that happened a couple of years back, I don't think I ever told any of the members of the group of this, I was probably embarrassed, but I was teaching my Hinduism class at Cornell, and there was one day when I thought I would make my students laugh, and I said a few things that probably weren't very respectful about Indra, you know, trying to make a joke. Next night, about 10 feet from my classroom was third floor of the building, which is top floor, the roof is right there. On the roof right above my classroom, struck by lightning. The fire department had to come, all kinds of damage. They were talking about it all over school, that Professor Muller insulted Indra and then lightning struck.
Anyway, you did not disclose this all because of me. Who knows?
Yeah.
You see, I just now am reminded of, after hearing this incident, you know, if a guest, Brahmin, especially a Brahmin guest, comes to us and we do not entertain him, destruction will come to that house. This actually happened in Belur Math. So one noon, a poor Brahmin was seen coming there. He came to Belur Math and he said, I am so hungry, for 2-3 days I didn't have food. Will you give me? Unfortunately, everybody had eaten food, there was nothing left. But you know, there were fruits, etc. in the, Thakur Shrine. But we do not usually give to them because it's meant for worship. Now what happened, Mahapurush Maharaj was there upstairs. So after food, he casually looked through the window, saw a man going away with a downcast face. So he called the attendant and said, what is the matter? Then the attendant, who knew this, he explained. He wanted some food and we couldn't give. So he said, oh, here also I expected to get some food, I didn't get, and he went away. He was going away. Then Mahapurushma said, no, quickly call him back. We'll give something. But by that time, the man had disappeared. So Mahapurush Maharaj became very sad. And then he was feeling something will happen. After 3-4 days, the cow shed caught fire and gutted down. And then he said, it's because we have not treated that person properly. Yeah. So there are so many mysterious things are there. We do not need to be frightened. But we should never be disrespectful, and neither should we neglect. You worship, that's why Hindus, you know, temples if you go, lots of gods. What about here? People do not know about Hindu gods and goddesses. Here also, people believe in some powers, you know. If you go to some forest or here and there, Red Indians, they believe in so many spirits and other things. So the point is, these gods and goddesses represent so many aspects of the one Godhead. So there are so many people, and some people like some aspect of the gods or goddesses. That is absolutely good. We should never disrespect anybody, whatever they worship. That is the whole point. You know, even some of us, this person is worshipping Ganesha, something like that, we can make remark. Why not? Ganesha can be worshipped, and then Kartikeya can be worshipped, biggest temple, most popular temple in South India now is Kartikeya temple. What is the temple? Shabarimala is the most popular temple.
That is
Ayyappa
Swami.
Yes, Ayyappa Swami is Kartikeya. He is called Shanmukha, Kartikeya, Ayyappa, Shabari. Shabari Malai means it is a hill. Shabari is hill. Malai means hill. Shabari is hill. Anyway. So, what is the point Maharaj is referring? If we are... Yeah.
Maharaj, two questions. First, you said about reciting Chandi is very good. That is in Bengal.
Yeah.
And in South, we do Alalika Sahasranam.
Yeah.
What is the advantage of that? And my second question is, are there really spirits that exist and that can cause problems?
Yes, both. First, you know, every region worships God in a particular way. So in Bengal, Durga Puja is very popular and this recital of Chandi is very popular. So that is worship of the Divine Mother in the form of, you know, the second type of worship, that is prayers, chanting, etc. So one is actually taking flowers, etc., ritually worshipping. The second is, this is also worship, chanting, prayer, etc., japa and all those things. Your second question is, I already had mentioned that incident in Sri Ramakrishna's life. Shudhiram went because his daughter was possessed. So, malevolent spirits do exist. They can do damage. Usually they don't do. They live in their own world. So, just as there are human beings who can do wicked, evil deeds, even if we don't know anything about them. Do you think evil people do evil only to some people, or they kill people, they murder people, you know? What is it called? They hire murderers and to do something. Even governments hire, what is that name?
Assassin.
Contract killers. Hitman. Like that. People are there. So what happens when this kind of people, they meet also kind of violent death, then they become these malevolent spirits and they can do harm. But what we have to be aware of is that every spirit is not malevolent. There are also good spirits. Swami Brahmanandaji in Vrindavan, he encountered a good spirit. So Swami Brahmanandaji took a vow, I will every day sit up and meditate, do japam at midnight. And one night he couldn't get up. And at that time, one night he was oversleeping. Then suddenly he felt that somebody pushed him. And then he thought his brother disciple Turiyanandji did that. But Turiyanandji was sleeping. Then he woke up and then he saw a Vaishnava saint sitting there. So, but here he is not a spirit. He is disembodied being to help other spiritual aspirants. This person is when they see some people took some vows and not able to, for some reason not doing, they will come and help. And several days thereafter he used to appear at midnight. These are all thrilling incidents. So there are malevolent spirits. And sometimes they can do, but that's very rare. Because we are frightened, we think that whenever something is not going right with us, that some spirit is doing something. Similarly, in this respect, you know, there are some people who are mantriks, black magicians. Yeah, and there are people, because mantras are real. So if somebody misuses the power of a mantra, it is called black magic. That is there in every region, every religion. Yeah.
Maharaj, if someone is possessed by, say, evil spirit, how do you know that person might be creating problems? But how do you know it is because of evil spirit or his own personality?
There are certain, you see, however a person may be, he can only do certain things. It is beyond any human being to do certain other things. So, otherwise sometimes psychologists will tell us, somebody thinks he is possessed. Actually it is his own, what is called unconscious, taking over and acting. But if malevolent spirits take over, they can also predict things. They can say things that is there, here and there, which no ordinary man will never be able to tell. It is possible, but it is a rare, very rare phenomena. So usually it is a psychological problem. The real possession is a rare phenomena, but it is there. If a goddess, god or goddess can exist, why not the other side also? Yeah. The scriptures say that they exist. And saints also have experienced it. So many things are there. Just I will talk about very little about, you know, Swami Adbhutanandaji. He was instructed by Sri Ramakrishna one day with special mantras. You go and meditate on the Divine Mother. There is a place in Dakshineswar. So Swami Adbhutananda went there, and later on he reminisced. Whole day, one after the other, very frightening, ferocious forms of the Divine Mother. He was having constant visions. And towards evening he thought he will die. Just at that time, he had no option but to remember Sri Ramakrishna, Thakur, please come and help me. And then Sri Ramakrishna felt like going there. He went there hurriedly, then stood at a distance, because there was a huge dog in between. And then Sri Ramakrishna asked him to come near. And then seeing him, Swami Adbhutananda got courage and he got up. And Sri Ramakrishna remarked, "Today, Mother saved you. Otherwise, it would have been very difficult for you to come out." And then he showed the dog and said, "Do you know what is it? It is Bhairava. The Divine Mother has kept it here so that people cannot disturb you." Many, many sadhakas die doing certain type of practices, you know, in crematoriums and other places. It is also true. But by death, they have not lost anything. They will only gain next birth they will do. So you will have to be also, if something wrong is going on in our lives, it need not be. It is our own past karma that come to fructify. Each one of us come with our own past karma. Another point we have to, you know, there is nothing we can do. Even if we get worried or anxious about it, things happen according to each one's karma. There is no point. So let us try to do something good, pray to God, and leave things to nature, as we say, and things will have its own, this thing. Yeah. Okay.
So, Maharaj, why in South India people worship Hanuman more?
You know, it is a matter of some great people, they worship, and then other people will follow. Huh?
I think in North India also is pretty good. We are an Indian everywhere.
Especially some areas.
Very popular. North Ramchandra ji, Krishna and Hanuman.
Yes.
No, no, not everywhere, but some regions, some gods or goddesses are more popular than others. So that is a fact. It depends upon, you know. Andhra Pradesh, full of Rama. So that is, it doesn't matter. They are all various forms of gods. Same God, that's absolutely fine. All right. So, the second point is ritualism. Nowadays, have you noticed, young people don't like rituals. There's so many people who poo-poo also and say, oh, this is all superstition, etc. Sri Ramakrishna is specially born to prove the efficacy of ritualism. So, if a person has faith, and if he does certain rituals with Shraddha, slowly he will progress in spiritual life. In fact, most of us need rituals rather than, you know, you think that we can meditate. There are so many people who say we meditate. What is the meditation? Either it is wandering of the mind or what is called, they go to a kind of sleep and think that they are really meditating. Yeah, it is far better. There are orthodox people, Kshudiram himself, how much he was really devoted. You know, every day he used to go gather flowers, bring them and worship. If you have read, you will recall it. One day he went to collect flowers and a small girl was following him and holding the branches down. Kshudiram asked, my child, who are you? And she said, I am Sitala, whom you worship. I am pleased with your worship. I have come to help you. So where will we go? You know, our faith without these rituals and other things is foundationless. Rituals are the foundation. That's why Swami Vivekananda made a remark. That religion in which rituals are rampant, great saints are born only in that religion. Where there are no rituals, it is a rare phenomenon to have a saint. Yeah. So, Maharaj is telling about four. First is ritual worship, then is prayer, japam, etc., recitation, etc. Third is meditation, and what is the fourth? Swarupa Anusandhana. Meditation on the nature of God. Nature of God is, really speaking, it is indescribable. But what we call Sat, Chit and Ananda. Meditation on this. How many people can do? Or Aham Brahmasmi, Tattvamasi. Very few. Nowadays the phenomenon, you know, lot of people, they are following this Eckhart Tolle, and there are so many people like Advaita, modern Advaita. There are people who say, you don't need to do anything. Just you sit there and say, I am Brahman. You have achieved everything. Only make sure that you write the check or master card or visa card accepted. And they go to the extent that you lead your own normal life. You can have relationships with men, women, and do whatever you like. And yet, all that you need to say is, Aham Brahmasmi. How far they are from truth. But this is the age. And also you notice, youngsters, they don't like rituals. They don't want to come. But they are ready to do some good work. So many young people who do good work, but they don't want to attend our classes or do things like that. Neither they have the time nor the inclination is there. But these are very helpful things for us. So Maharaj then proceeds, there are different stages through which the aspirant progresses. It is of vital importance that a man begin his journey from where he is. This is the most important point. If a man is fit only for ritualistic worship, he should do only ritualistic worship. never look down upon it because it helps. Sri Ramakrishna's special birth is to prove the validity of all these forms, including tantrika forms. Certain tantrika practices are abhorrent, or look like abhorrent. But Sri Ramakrishna had gone through them in a sattvika way, and he proved that is also a door to God realization. Maybe, like he used to say, some of them are like back door. But that's okay. It is impossible for you to come through the front door, then at least you go through the back door. What is the problem? All of us, we say, I'm a smaller person. I want to enter only through the front. Front door is closed, back door is also closed. That's what happens. But in the tantras, there are three stages are there. Tantric worship. We are only focused on what is called that left-handed practice. What are those three? Pashu, Veera, and Daiva. So the middle one, Veera. Veera means heroic worship, where they drink wine, mix with women, etc. That is called left-handed practice. Sri Ramakrishna never had gone through those things. A little bit he had done. He had to sit on the lap of a young woman and do. Yeah, he sipped a little bit of wine. But don't imitate Sri Ramakrishna, you know. You sip and you sleep. So this is a very important point. We have to start where we are. How do we know where we are? Everybody thinks that he is fit for Aham Brahmasmi Sadhana. He can't sit for a few minutes peacefully. That is one. Even if somebody sits there, observe the person's reaction. Action and reaction. Then you will get it. The next question is our common question. How can I check a distracting thought that persistently arises in my mind? This is our problem. Think to yourself, this thought is immensely harmful to me. It will be my ruin. Impress the idea again and again upon your mind. The mind is extremely susceptible to suggestions and will learn whatever you teach it. Therefore, if through discrimination you can impress upon it the joy and fullness of the spiritual life and the folly of worldly attachments, it will devote itself more and more to God, and you will find yourself freed from all distracting thoughts. Very important hint. If a distracting thought comes into our mind, we want to get rid of it. But do we really think it is a harmful thought? Do you understand? Do we really feel it is a very harmful thought? How many of us? In fact, many times we welcome it. Yeah, distracting thought. I'll make a little bit of fun. You know, so long I'll be talking. My center to people, absolute quiet. And then I say, go to the shrine and sit for some time and then come. But the moment they go to the shrine, first thing that comes out is coughing. Second that happens is itching. At impossible places, itching starts. Yeah. And then somehow, if everything is quiet, it's very uncomfortable. But if somebody starts coughing, a very welcome thought. Because now, again, what a damn nuisance, I'm sitting and meditating. It is a good excuse for not thinking about God. See, so many things are there. And if by mistake any phone call comes, They jump, the person will jump up and then go out. What a relief. We have to observe these things. There are so many. So, if we don't want a thought, we have to be very observant and say, this is a very harmful thought. If you go on saying it is a very harmful thought, afterwards, slowly, slowly, you can try to get rid of it. That is our problem. Swami, Brahmananda is telling something very interesting. Within the palace of seven gates, there dwells a king with whom a poor man begs an audience. The king's minister grants his request and leads him through the gates to the royal presence. At each gate, there stands a richly dressed officer, and each time the poor man asks the minister if that is the king, the minister answers, no, each time, until they have passed the seventh gate and the king stands before them in all his splendor and beauty. Then, no question is asked. A man recognizes his king. So like that, Bhrigu goes on asking, teach me further. And then when he reaches a certain stage, he doesn't say, Adhihi Bhagavo Brahmet, he doesn't come. That means, he has reached that state. So also Svetaketu, he comes to, and then nine times he has been taught, thou art that Svetaketu. And then afterwards, every time, eighth time, so you teach me further, Bhagavan. Yes, I will teach you. But ninth time, he doesn't ask. That means, yes, there is nothing more to ask. So it is with the Guru. Like the king's minister, he leads the disciple through the different stages of spiritual unfoldment until he leaves with the Lord. This is a very important point we have to understand. You see, one of the questions that comes, rather two questions. The first thing that many times we ask, is my guru capable of taking me? Because people think and that, oh, he also eats like me, he also cuts jokes like me, or maybe even more than me. So can this man be really a guide, real guide to me? What that has got to do with Guru? Who is the real Guru? The real Guru is manifesting through somebody. Here again Maharaj makes two points. The first point is, in the beginning we need an external Guru. But later on, one's own mind becomes one's guru. But even the external guru, what is that external guru? Is it the human being? Or is it something which comes through that guru? That's important. So the guru leads, because its guru means God in the form of the guru, leads the disciple until he reaches the goal and no further questions are there. That is not a problem. The problem is, am I having that Guru Bhakti? Or am I critical of my Guru? Let me talk a little bit here. You know, we have become so accustomed to find fault with other people. We also unconsciously we find fault with the Guru. Because it is the same tendency. And that is dangerous thing to do. So they go together. If any person says, I am so devoted to my Guru, I will not find fault with my Guru, but I continue finding fault with others. Do you think he will succeed? He will never succeed, because you are putting the same specs. So you will see your Guru also in the same way. So slowly, the first thing is Guru is a target. How is a Guru a great person? Because it's not whether the Guru is great or not, is not the point. I decided to see in this person God. Because it is a target, I would say, you know, all your darts you will throw towards the Guru. So I decide to do it. Even if he beats me, even if he misbehaves, even if he leads a bad life, for me, he is Sachidananda. Madguruhu, Jagadguruhu. You know, there is this thing. Mannatho, Jagannatha. Madguruhu, Jagadguruhu. Madatma, Sarvabhutantaratma. Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah. This is the point we have to recognize. We are always thinking, let my Guru prove to me that he is really a great man. That is not the point. The point is, let me prove to myself that I can look upon one person as my Guru. This is the one of the most important relationships, Guru-Sishya relationship. So, which Guru doesn't have defects? Is there any, do you find in this earth anybody who is without a defect? If you are determined to find fault, you will get more than one fault in any Guru. So this Guru Tattva has to be understood. This is one danger. Another danger is Guru cult. Guru sect and Guru cult. What is the difference between these two?
In the Guru cult, you start disrespecting or you disrespect the other Gurus and other people who are on the same path. But in Guru sect, it's more of a group, more of inspiration and motivation.
Yeah, you are right. But in a way, it's a better way of expression is, when a person idealizes the Guru and then slowly starts looking upon him as divine, as God, etc., and progresses in spiritual life, that is called Guru sect. When a person targets the Guru's body as the be-all and end-all and go on, you know, catering only to the Guru's body and never moves forward, that is called Guru cult. Then comparisons come. My Guru is better than your Guru. If anybody proves that his Guru is better Guru, sometimes like tribal mentality, you know, so which tribe is greater, more powerful? Let us fight. If I win, my God is greater. If you win, your God is greater. Like that, you know, if my Guru can attract 100 audience, and if your Guru attracts only 20 audience, which Guru is greater? Yeah, these are our human frailties, weaknesses. We have to understand crystal clear. It is our sincerity, our desire to progress in spiritual life, which plays an important part. So there is a beautiful incident. I must have told you. I don't know, but it can be repeated. We had a wonderful sadhu called Swami Bodhatmananda as our training center principal. Extraordinarily great sadhu. There was a devotee, young man, who knew him, or he knew. And this young man took initiation from Belur Math. And the young man, after initiation was over, he came to Bhav Maharaj, we used to call him Bhav Maharaj. He came there and said, made pranams, I want your blessings. Today I got initiated. Then Bhav Maharaj smilingly asked him, did you give Guru Dakshina? He said, yes, Maharaj. You know, we have a set, a small plate with some cloths and flowers, etc. We came. And that was what he meant, Guru Dakshina is given. Then Bhav Maharaj, very serious, and he said, do you know what real Guru Dakshina is? Guru Dakshina is, you follow the instructions of your Guru and realize God. That is true Guru Dakshina. And that truth holds true for all time. That is true Guru Dakshina. Yeah. So, the important point we have to keep in mind is, First thing is, do not target the body of the guru as I want to feed him, I want to do this, I want to do that. Swami Dayatmanaji said, and then from now onwards, I will not care whether he eats or not. That's not the idea. Yes, we also have to live, you know. Yeah, the idea is, there is certain limit. You respectfully, you pay that attention. But beyond that, don't pay attention. And am I making progress? So am I seeing divinity? You know, what is spiritual life? Gradually seeing divinity in everybody. First we have to see in somebody. And sometimes we can see in our mother, in our father, in our teacher. But for disciples, guru is most important thing. This is important. Never idolize the guru. Otherwise it becomes idol worship, not ideal worship, idol worship. And that is what makes most people, they go down there. Second, do not seek any faults in the guru. Third, do not compete for the guru's affection, because jealousy will come. You see, sometimes, most of the times I would say, the guru will be closer to somebody, for whether it is justified or unjustified or usually necessity. Then you see, the other people will be thinking, oh, my guru, he doesn't even look at me, or if at all go, I just make a quick pranam and go away. So hardly there is any contact between me and my guru. And this is one type of thinking is there. And this is one type. The other type is there. Whatever my guru does is super. You know, even by chance if he sneezes also, some interpretation will come. Some divine interpretation will come. Yeah, there are this is called guru cult. No. And then one has to be very frank with the guru. If a person is not able to be frank with the guru, then the guru-sishya relationship will not come. Let me talk very shortly about this. What is this frankness? What are we talking about?
Whatever you are going through, whatever your emotions are,
yeah.
Talk it out honestly, not
so it
make
helps.
An impression or remove an impression.
Yeah. It helps
the disciple,
because so many times we suffer suppressing these things within ourselves. If we talk to somebody, then it helps. But the guru also, very often, you know, he can observe much better, and maybe he can give some good suggestions also, which one can follow easily. And it helps. But the thing is, if we do not confess, that means we do not trust him. And that is not at all good. Once you chose, you have to trust. Do you think the guru really betrays your trust and then does something like that? Never. And ultimately, who is the guru? Real guru is, you are confessing to whom? It's a Christian practice, you know, confession is there. So sometimes the betrayal has come, and sometimes tug of war within the confessor. Suppose somebody comes and says, I have murdered these fellows. And there is a rule, even if he confesses, he cannot opt it. But suppose somebody comes and says, I am going to bomb this place. It's a confession. Should he tell it? See, these are rules, regulations are there. Where one, your lips are sealed by holy vows, oaths. But in this case, for the sake of saving other people's lives, one has to do it. But anyway, coming back to our point, you know, one should trust the guru. Do you trust the guru? What type of relationship you have? Very peculiar one. I don't know whether I can convey it properly. respect is there, trust is not there. This is one. Then the other is, okay, I respect my guru. Does the guru respect me? I trust the guru. Does the guru trust me? This is another question that comes. What does it matter to you whether the guru trusts you or not? It is your business. You decided to trust the guru. And if you question your guru's trust, whom are you questioning? Whom are you questioning? You are not questioning Ramakrishna. You are mistrusting yourself. If I don't trust, then whose fault is that? Then this is also related to God. If I don't trust, then I won't trust God also. It's our problem, you know. If things are going on well, then God is looking after me. If something goes wrong, we think that He has turned His face away from us. That is totally wrong. Then, what is real Guru Bhakti? Certain things are there. If I am having real Guru Bhakti, I will never denigrate any other Guru. I'll give an example. You know, there was this Swami Ramdas, Swami Chinmayananda. They all respect Sri Ramakrishna. So when Swami Yatheeshwanji was there, once Swami Ramdas, Kanangad Ramdas, he came to the ashrama to make pranams to Thakur in the temple. Maharaj was, I heard this one, so Maharaj was sitting in the veranda and he saw and he asked who is going. Then somebody informed, Swami Ramdas, he was a famous person, saint in those days. Immediately he stood up with folded hands. Swami Ramdas didn't come to Swami Yatheeshwaranji. He just stood there. Swami Ramdas went inside, made pranams, and then he went away. Until he went away, I heard that Maharaj was standing with folded hands to show his respect. So, this is a disease is creeping among our devotees that my guru is incomparable. That means denigrate or look down or neglect, disrespect other gurus. A true disciple respects every guru because the real guru is only working through everybody. Another very important point is, supposing you have a guru and then later on he turns out to be either a fake or a man of wrong conduct. If such thing happens, what should you do?
It's the guru's teachings that matter. Yeah. That makes me a better person. Not
so you're not talking about the guru's teachings. Most of the guru's teachings is exactly the same. They are not talking anything different. In fact, some false gurus talk much better way than the real gurus. That is not the problem. We are talking about our attitude towards our guru. In Bengali, there is a saying, no?
Jadapi guru shudi badi jai, tathapi amar guru nityananda
rai. Can you translate it into?
Though my guru goes to the toddy shop, where you train, still he is my guru. So I have full respect for him.
You are not translating properly. Nityananda Rai.
Still my guru is Nityananda Rai.
He is God himself.
God himself.
To me. That is the correct attitude. Now, does it help? Usually we don't have that problem. You see, our gurus are more or less respectful and good, of good conduct and everything is fine. But sometimes it could be. Then what should be our attitude? Even if my guru turns out to be the worst, what is that turns out? Whom am I calling the guru? Is it the body and mind? Or is it something within through that body and mind?
Through the principle.
So if I don't focus upon it, I think that this person's conduct proves whether he is a good guru or bad guru. Then I will be the loser. So the real guru is God, Satchidananda. It is absolutely Sri Ramakrishna, direct disciples, many times they told. To the extent a person unites his will with the universal will, to that extent his Guru Shakti is manifest.
Can it be reversed way? If the student goes bad, Guru can be good to, like he said, the proverb.
Yeah.
Anything happened to Guru, still Nityananda Rai.
Yeah.
But if the student sometimes goes bad, Guru's attitude towards the student would not change.
Yeah. See, that is the point we are discussing here. If you mean by Guru this human personality, he may turn against the student also and say, I don't want this student. But if you are talking about God, the God will never, it is because he is the root cause of all these problems. It is he who created all this mischief, you know. The biggest terrorist, as somebody put, is God. It's the truth. Simply if you close your eyes and say, no, don't call mischief. Who created all the terrorists? Is the Dada of all the terrorists.
Maharaj, but wasn't there a story about Holy Mother that one of her disciples became immoral and other devotees were telling her you shouldn't see him anymore and she said, no, that's my son, I have to see him, something like that?
Yes, many times. You see, this is the sentiment. Once Holy Mother accepts somebody, then she will never give it up. There is a famous verse in the Ramayana, Valmiki Ramayana. Vibhishana deserts his brothers and then he comes. Then he is standing. He sent a news that I want to take shelter at Rama's feet. Rama was testing other people. He called Sugriva, he called other people. And everybody said, no, he may be an enemy spy. He came to spy and find out our strengths and weaknesses and goes back. We can never trust, he's a Rakshas. Rama was smiling. Then he asked Hanuman. Hanuman said, I have seen how he behaved in that place. Not only that, he has come to take refuge. How can you refuse him? He has come as a refugee. And then Rama utters a very famous statement. If anybody once in his life says, O Rama, I surrender myself to you, thereafter I will never desert him. Even if he deserts me, I will not give him up. The same sentiment Swami Vivekananda says. I think Sister Nivedita or somebody writes, go as much low as possible. I will come after you, catch hold of your shikha and then pull you up. Only condition is keep the shikha. Because if you put all coconut oil, So, very important topic we are discussing. Our whole spiritual life hinges upon this. In this world, in this life, we must have somebody to whom we wholeheartedly surrender ourselves. Can a guru spoil a disciple? Is one of the questions that comes, because there are also cases. It is a very unusual case where a guru, abuses the respect and devotion of his very... But if he does that, that is also, if he has a real faith in the real guru, then it will not happen. But if it happens, he has to learn his lesson. Maybe some karma is there, we don't know. So that is most important for us to have the highest respect. And we should not degrade our guru into this body worship and all that. Body is there, of course. We respect it. So, do we trust him? Can we frankly tell him everything? If we are not able to do it, we will not progress in spiritual life. Be assured about it. You tell anything, the utmost secret you tell, can you not tell to your God? If you can't tell to your God, then you can't tell. There's an interesting incident. Once the son of a public woman entered into the room of Sri Ramakrishna at Dakshineswar, and Sri Ramakrishna was taking rest. He caught hold of his feet very forcibly and bowed down. And Sri Ramakrishna's feet began to burn. I don't know how many of you remember that incident. Yeah. And Sri Ramakrishna, what can be done? Already the man had caused it. He said, you confess your sins, you will be free. And he couldn't do it. And then he told him, you go and confess to Mother Ganga. You don't, but that poor unfortunate fellow could not even do it.
I have a question. So like when in like Sri Ramakrishna or Ramana Maharshi and all, when they were, the disciples come and confess their sins and all those things, they take their sins, right? That is why in some of the books they say, like, as a disciple you don't go and confess your sin or tell your problem, so that pass it on to those gurus, which is not a good thing. Is that something like that they do, or?
It is, you know, we are first of all talking about certain types of gurus who had the power to absorb the sins of other people. Every person doesn't have that capacity. What we are talking is, if you do not trust your own guru, whom you have chosen, then whom else are you going to trust? Whether the guru is capable of absorbing your sin or not, the point. Most of the people nowadays, they will not be able to do that. We have to suffer our own sins. But you should have that trust in the guru to be able to tell like a child, not hiding anything. Otherwise, that means, you know, you don't trust the person. If you don't trust the person, what is going to happen? That means you don't trust God, really speaking. And that is not going to be a good thing at all. That is the idea. But don't take it as a license and say, I have got 100,000 things. It will take 3 months to confess all your autobiography from your grandfather's time. This also happened. Aldous Huxley is writing in one of his essays, that one, you know, this confession business. So one woman has prepared 100 pages of confessions. I did this, I did that, and that. And there was one Saint Francis de Sales. What is that? Introduction to Devout Life. He says that this is not a license. So no human being in 100 lives can make this kind of mistakes. So the woman was what is called a kind of psychological case. She is imagining, I have done this, I have done that, I have done that, all those things. And this is another extreme people go. But I am not talking about that. I am talking that you should be able to trust your guru. You should be able to respect him. At the same time, you should be able to see not the body aspect, not even the mind aspect. Certain things happen. You know, some people, they have become unstable towards the end of their life. And I have some experiences when one devotee came and then told me her guru has become like a vegetable, the last stages. And they have some understanding about this state. That means he was very, I thought he was very spiritual. Now he is like this. So what is going to happen to me? How do you know your guru is a vegetable? So if you do not have that kind of trust, don't take initiation. You just respect him, go there, take his teachings and maintain that relationship. But once you have, that is why Sri Ramakrishna, Swami Brahmananda, all these people, crystal clear these things, instructions. Before you select a guru, test him any number of times. Wait, doesn't matter. But once you have done this, is to compare to marriage. Once you are married, then you are married for life. life after life, this is what they say. So, how do we know? We have true respect for the Guru, because whatever may be his habit or behavior, we will respect him, because that I decided to look upon him as God. Second, if anybody makes any type of comparison, my Guru is great, the other Guru is, or my Guru is not so great, my Guru is only Vice President, or your Guru is the President. Like, you know, there are Prabuddhas there. Yeah. Usually it happens in the other way around. Oh, my Guru is a President Maharaj. Your Guru is only Vice President. As though President and Vice President shows the inferiority and superiority of a Guru. This is nonsense. All Gurus, irrespective, they are all instruments. The real Guru is only one. It is Sachidananda. At the time of initiation, I don't know what others do, but most people, what they do, they say, "Oh Lord, I am, you know, you are supposed to utter your vow, and then, oh Lord, whatever I have done in the past life, I don't know. What I am going to do in my future lives also, I don't know. I offer the results of all these things at your feet. Graciously accept them and guide my life so that I can come to you at the end." This is what our Gurus do. They offer all the disciples at the feet of Thakur and Ma. So when a Guru initiates in our order, so this initiation is considered as a second birth. So yes, just as the first birth there are parents, biological parents, the second birth also has parents. Yeah. Who are the parents in the second birth? For us, you know, you can say Thakur and Mother, Vishnu and Lakshmi, or Shiva, or Parvati, it is like that. And there is a third birth which is called Sannyasa. And there also, Guru becomes the father and Shastra becomes the mother. The point here, suppose you are initiated and your mother is also initiated, or your father is also initiated, your husband is also initiated, your wife also is initiated. What do they become?
Brothers and sisters.
This is an idea we have to do. Let any devotee be initiated. If it is Ramakrishna is the father and Holy Mother is the mother, it doesn't matter who initiates whom. Everybody should be brother and sister. This is, we are a spiritual family. I know it is not easy. The moment you are initiated, you don't become an enlightened soul. But as our goal is to consider everybody in a different light. Then sectarianism comes, and within Guru Bhais and all Guru Bhaginis and all those things. And that is really not a good thing at all to do this one. So we have to, respecting Guru, if we disrespect any other Guru, we are disrespecting our own Guru. That's why Sri Ramakrishna used to say, if you disrespect any god and goddess, you are disrespecting me. So if anybody disrespects any other religion, however crude it may appear to us, we are disrespecting our own religion. The religion is there to ennoble us, to make us better people, not to make us go down. It's very important. So, also, what is the true respect? Pranam to Guru is not feeding, it is not making 100 times pranams. What is it, true Guru Dakshina?
Follow.
I don't say God realization, but I will say sincerely practicing Guru's instructions and trying to become a better person. So, what do we need to do? Those who are initiated, then you will have to sit and think, really, am I doing what my Guru has asked me to do? Am I progressing in spiritual life? If that is not important in your life, then your taking initiation is only just a formal affair. It will help. But this is how a guru-sishya relationship is there. One of the most important steps in assessing our spiritual progress is to question ourselves, what type of relationship I have with my guru? What type of relationship I have with other people? What type of relationship I have with God? Usually, our relationship with God is totally dependent upon our relationship with what we have with our guru, because it is our own mind. People don't understand it. You think you can have any type of relationship with people or guru, and you can have divine relationship with God, because it is dealing with the same mind. This point was brought out by Eric Fromm in the book The Art of Loving. He says, you know, many people say we should not love ourselves. That is selfishness. We should always love other people. He said, this is illogical, irrational. It's because it is, he gave the example, if a person puts on black colored specs, whether he looks at other people or whether he looks at himself, he will appear in the same light, same color. Same way, if we say we love other people, but we don't love ourselves, that is exactly, it's a wrong thing. You don't love other, if you don't love yourself, you don't love other people. But if you love other people truly, you can't help but love yourself. That is one of the advices given is, you better forgive yourself more than you forgive other people. It's very important. Love yourself. Do you love yourself? You are under the impression you love yourself. No, that's not correct. If you love yourself, you will not stuff your stomach with all sorts of junk food. Yes? Because I want my health. But many people think, you know, I love myself. My tongue is telling me stuff, you know, all these masala and all those things. Excellent, 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 like that. Who is going to digest? Who is going to suffer? So they apply this to every field of life. So this is called Atmaneva Atmanatushtaha. We have to Uddhare Atmana Atmanam. That is the thing. So, 2 points here I would like to remind you is that one, or closely examine what type of relationship I have with my sit, and then just superficially you say I have great love for my guru, but deep inside there may be distrust, there may be outright disrespect. How does it manifest? It manifests in the unconsciously in many ways. We don't know how much our unconscious deceives us, cheats us. Where is the question of spiritual progress? It is impossible. That's why Swami Yatishchandra used to say, observe yourself constantly. So what type of relationship I have with my guru? And that is how guru can help. If we have right relationship with my guru, do I criticize my guru? Do I criticize my guru? Do I abuse my guru? Yes. If you don't follow his instructions, only you fall at his feet and make pranams whenever possible, put flowers there and feed him nicely or give him presents. These are not real indications of love of guru. Real indication says, you progress in your spiritual life, that is the only indication. So ultimately, Swami Brahmananda used to say, this was question put, what happens when a person when is taken by hand by the guru and he goes to the deity and says, here is your chosen deity. The question is, you know, I am seeing, Guru shown me the chosen ideal. What happens to the Guru who showed me? He merges in the Ishtadevata. What does that mean?
same.
It means, who was my guru from the beginning? It is only the Ishtadevata. This is the truth. Even from normal point of view, the one who is within you and me and within everybody is only that one God. Yeah. So, very important points we have discussed today. If we look down upon any guru, just because I think that my guru is greater guru than anybody, you have respect for your guru, but the same respect you will also give to other people. You follow your guru's instruction. Don't go on following everybody's instruction. One guru. That's why Hinduism's essence of the Hinduism, 5 points. You know what it is? One religion, one scripture, and one path, one guru, one mantra. That is most emphasized by Sri Ramakrishna. Srinadhe Janaki Nadhe Abheda Paramatma Tathapi Mama Sarvasva Ramaha Kamala Lojanaha. So we have to learn that. How do we know we have love for our Guru? I follow his instructions, I make spiritual progress. How do I know I am following his instructions? Because I make progress. If I follow his instructions, I must make progress. And how do I know I am making progress? Because these changes will take place. The change is our love for God increases. And the more we become spiritual, the more our attitude towards everybody changes really. How many problems you just see? Those who follow the path of Jnana, I have heard innumerable times, Swamis, there is no other path excepting Jnana Marga. Jnana Marga is one path, definitely. But it doesn't mean everybody has to travel there. Whereas Sri Ramakrishna's teaching is, there are many other paths out there. Karma is there, yoga is there, bhakti is there. Everybody can reach the same state. And then there are some people who think that they are fit for Jnana Marga. In this yoga, only the two paths are very important. Bhakti Marga, because we are emotional, aided by Karma Yoga and reason, which is Jnana Yoga. These are the important things. So, this is most important point. How much respect our tradition teaches us. Swami Vivekananda, prostrated in front of Swami Brahmananda, saying, Guru Putraha, Guruvat, something like that. Guruvat Guru Putreshu. And Swami Brahmananda prostrated in Jeshta Bhrata Pitru Sama. His elder brother is equivalent. And then their disciples, like these monkeys and gulls, started fighting. Who was great? Swami Brahmananda was great. We don't know even those who are living nearby, whether they love us or, you know, so many tragedies. Suddenly one morning husband is gone. Hum Pat Swaha, gone. 20 years he has been declaring, I love you. Suddenly he is gone. And you have not understood him. You will understand who is great. What a stupid thing we are doing. To judge this Jivan Mukta is great or that Jivan Mukta is great, who can understand? Do you have any authority to do that? But we go on doing Swami Vivekananda is good. So many of us do that. This comparison, nonsense. So follow one guru, whoever. And then if you follow, you will reach. Guru will only tell the correct path. Guru also is a target, I said. Target of what? For you to see some divine So if suppose he is God, he behaves like God, what is your greatness? What is your greatness if you see God in a godly, God-like person? But if he is an ungod-like person, to see God in him, that's shows your real greatness. But anyway, many gurus are very decent people, very good people, and don't expect miracles. You know, I have seen this also. My guru is protecting me all the time until something bad happens. Then they feel abandoned. Or my guru had lost his power. Or he is particularly not gracious to me. All these stupid dramas playing in the mind, they are obstructions. All right, we will stop here. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Was Dronacharya justified in demanding Guru Dakshina of Eklavya?
Absolutely no.
Yes.
This for two reasons. One reason is, he has not really taught him.
Right.
Poor fellow
had taught himself.
And when he became an expert, it is absolutely cruel, unjustified. That is why he was not a real Brahmana. He was a very mean-minded person, though he was expert. Dronacharya, you know, he brought the ruin of Virat Raja, Drupada Raja.
Right, Virat Raja.
What is the quality of Brahmana?
So they were friends, that's actually.
That's Drupada Raja had insulted him. But if he was a Brahmin, then he should not keep in his mind, okay, that is his. But he took it. He, in fact, the very purpose of coming here is to demand the Guru Dakshina. What is the Guru Dakshina? Bind that fellow and bring him here. For a Brahmin, not only that, even Kripacharya was a Brahmin. In the end, Jaghannakas Bolina, horrendous thing. He and Ashwatthama, they joined together and went and then killed the innocent babes, which is unimaginable. Yeah. Many things. From Mahabharata we learn many, many things.
But there again,
Maharaj, but they were the guru, like for Dronacharya, he was the guru of the Shastras.
Yes.
He was not a spiritual guru.
He was not a spiritual teacher.
Right.
No. But that's not the point. The point is, they respected him like an Acharya.
Right.
But his question is, this poor Ekalavya, he refused to teach. That he had actually any worthy disciple should be taught. There is that Satyakama Jabala.
Yeah.
The story is there. The guru asked him, a boy frankly told, I don't know who my father was. My mother served many people. And then the guru understood and said, this truth can come only from the mouth of a Brahmin. You must be a Brahmin child. Or even if your father is not a Brahmin, you are a Brahmin. Because you did not hide thee. Whereas what did Karna do? He went to Parashurama and he told a lie. I am a Brahmin.
Yeah.
And learned. So he did not come in real time. So you have to learn our lesson. That even though he was a Acharya, but he did not do the right thing. He could have told him, okay, promise that you will not compete with Arjuna or something like this. It's a cruel like that he made him completely useless. And Ekalavya's greatness comes. That without hesitation, he cut off his thumb and then gave. And nowadays, you know, he said, give me your thumb. He will show the thumb. You
understand?
Thumbs up.
This case of killing all these babes of Pandavas.
Yeah.
And you know, when he was brought by Arjuna, and he And the greatest of Draupadi was to...
Yes.
That is the another very great...
Yes. Such a noble lady said that this is a Brahmana.
She looked herself as a mother. How mother feels.
Yeah.
And then he said, no, don't harm him.
Yeah.
That's a very great moral.
So many wonderful listings are there. We have to learn. Mahabharata is what is happening in our day-to-day life, in various ways. You know what happened? One couple used to come from Reading to our center. And they moved to Reading and they started coming. And then I was talking with them. And I asked them, what are you doing? He said, Maharaj, we started reading Mahabharata every night. Then I asked, how far have you come? Did you come the Kurukshetra war? He said, Swamiji, next day after our marriage, we were Kurukshetra war.
Question on Guru. Is living Guru is a must or is much better than some Guru who has left his body?
That's not a proper question. It is better to have a Guru whom we can do. Otherwise, certain things we miss. See, you can worship some great soul. Say, you are my Guru, you guide me. Guidance will come. If we are sincere, guidance will come.
Actually, it's my father's guru.
Whatever it is, you know, suppose something, you choose a living guru. Mm-hmm. There is no guarantee that he is going to be with you all the time. He will pass away. Then he will also help you in some other way, indirect way. But it is good to have a living guru because I just now mentioned, it is... when we don't see a guru, our imagination flares up. He is this, he is that, he is God, he has miraculous powers, this, that, anything you can attribute. But when a guru is living, then you observe there, and then you will not have that much of imagination. Fact. Then you can confess, you can respect him, you can do so many things. So that is very helpful to us. To respect a dead person is very easy. But to respect a living person, that's why there is some quip is there, you know. Once a disciple got into an emotional frenzy and he said, Guruji, I can sacrifice my life for your sake. The Guru said, idiot, can you live and serve your Guru? Can you say, it's far easier, you know, to die, to live and serve the Guru. That is going to be very difficult. Okay?
All right.
Yes, come.
Just because the Guru's body is not around, does that mean that we should go find another Guru?
We should? What?
Go find another living Guru.
You mean you want to?
I don't want to arrest him. It doesn't give you license to go and find another.
You see, Guru is only one.
Yes.
But you can have any number of upagurus. So if you say that this man is dead and then now I will adopt another Guru, no, you are free to learn many things, not only when the Guru is dead, even when the Guru is alive, some other things you can learn. What is the harm? But as I mentioned, our whole talk here, if you must have a special, very special relationship with the Guru who initiates you and you accepted him as that mantra Guru is only one. You can't go on changing. But you can learn from any number of teachers. In fact, if some guru is dead, find out some Swami or somebody in whom you have confidence and whom you can think guide you. Yeah. That is, in fact, it may be good. Sometimes not necessary, but sometimes. But rigidly some people, my guru is my guru. I will not go to anybody. it is a type of unspiritual stubbornness. I'm not saying you should go. What I'm saying, you must be flexible, must be open.
Like in Hinduism, we believe in rebirth, right? And
yeah.
We go through our past karma.
Yeah.
So similarly, for the goddess, they will take a lot of incarnations in different yugas. So is that they also going through their past karma?
Yes. Yes.
So even, I mean, we have like what they have, the, like you said, like a lot of goddesses and gods.
Yeah.
So even they have the rebirth and they have to go through their past karma.
No, no, there are two. If Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, they don't go through rebirth.
Okay.
But Indra and other gods and goddesses, but you we should not call them really God. They are exalted positions. The moment their punya credit is over, they will come back. Yeah. So if the punya is extreme, greatest, then that person becomes the king of that place. If the punya is slightly less, he becomes assistant manager.
Okay.
If the punya is still less, he will become what is called manager of a local office. Like that, there are gradations are there. If the punya is much less, then he will become just one dwarapalaka or something like that. Things like that. Yeah. But Guru, same God, will take another instrument. So according to the development of the jiva, he will guide. Guidance is what is called Guru. But this idea, a living Guru, is a good target for us to look upon him as something divine. That is the idea.